This is a second part of a series about issues, halachic issues, hashkafic issues in Corona, and a number of different rabbonim have written on the topic. I'll mention four or five as we go along, Amir Tzashem. One of the main topics of our discussion today will be Avelus, and I want to tell you why. First of all, we read in Parsha Shmini about Misas Bnei Aaron, and this Shabbos we have Achrimos. Secondly, we're in the Sfira period of time where Rabbi Akiva lost 24,000 students. We just commemorated Yom HaShoah and Yom HaZikaron, and people are still dying from Corona. And on a personal level, death is in the air, in a sense that my father-in-law just passed away and my wife just got up from Shiva. So that's why issues of Avelus are, in a sense, on my mind. But before I get into that, I want to mention a few things in Hashkafa that I've been hearing or reading or learning lately. And then we'll get down to more of the halachic topics that I want to cover with you. Last week, one of the things we touched upon, was the concept of praying alone, praying b'yichidus. We'll get back to that today, Amir Tzashem, again, from a different perspective, and praying for cholim, even on Shabbos and Yontif, perhaps. And I've mentioned in the past the concept of Tzaras HaYochid, that we have to identify with the suffering of individuals, of the Yochid, and Chazal seemed to indicate that that will bring about the ultimate Geula. Batzar Lecha, Chazal say, Lecha B'loshen Yochid, that we feel for the individual. And that's so crucial during these times. We often wonder about the experience of isolation. Here we call it bididut, or going into bidud. And many of the statements of Chazal indicate that the punishment fits the crime, and there's a concept called midah keneged midah. And sometimes from the punishment we have to learn about the crime. Chazal tell us that the punishment of nigei batim, when there's tzaras in the bayis, is for the Avera of Tzoros Ayin. And perhaps one could say that we're guilty of too much isolation during the course of regular life, and the punishment is isolation. And we have to be more involved with the community, with others. One thing I want to tell you about my father-in-law, Zichron Levracha, we just finished the Shiva, is that he was always interested in the Chabura, always interested in the Chevra. He was Maktiv Shalom L'chol Adam. He would get into a car, and if you didn't say hello, he would give you a Musa Shmuz. You should have been Maktiv Shalom. And he was Maktiv Shalom for an Akum. And his favorite story about being Maktiv Shalom was a Holocaust story. Later it's been published, but I heard it from him 4 decades ago. I want to begin with a few comments here of Rabbi Willig Shlita. One I was fascinated by, and again, it requires hours and hours of research. I'm just going to touch on the tip of the iceberg here about Lifnei Iver. And it's really interesting because especially in North America, where people are trying to express their gratitude to all sorts of workers in hospitals, staff, especially nurses. They send food and gifts to the nurses in the hospital. Now, some of the nurses might be Jewish. Most of them probably not. And the food that they're sending is not kosher. So somebody asks Rabbi Willig the following question. They're collecting funds to chip in for these gifts, these food gifts that are being sent to nurses. And he wants to know, am I in violation of Liftei Iver by chipping in for this food that's not kosher food? No problem in the case of a non-Jewish medical staff person or a nurse, but he says that some percentage of these medical staff that might receive these non-kosher gifts are actually Jewish, but they're not makpid, they don't care about kosher, and they're not religious Jews. And Rav Willig first assumes, without blinking, that there's no problem with Liftei Iver because the food is accessible whether you chip in or not. Meaning, they're going to be able to raise the funds. They would like you to chip in. But then he gets to what I consider the lumdus, the nitty-gritty of the sugya of Liftei Iver. What happens if I make something easier for you to have access to, and I know that you might violate an avera if I make this access to you? That's called in the Lashon of the Gemara in Nazir, which he doesn't refer to here, as chad ibra dinara. The case is wine for a Nazir, and you're giving him the wine. He's going to drink the wine, and he's a Nazir. You've made it possible for him in the case of Trey Ibri Dinara, because he has no way of getting access to the wine that's across the river. But in this case, you're both on the same side of the river, and you simply are Misayel over Averi. You make it a little easier for him. So that even if the food will be delivered to this hospital in any event, whether you chip in or not, but you are making it easier, maybe speeding up the process, but certainly being Misayel and help facilitating this non-kosher food that's going to the staff. And it became quite relevant because of this new movement that people are trying to, you know, make it easier for the nurses and send them the best of the catered foods, but again, it's coming from non-kosher restaurants. So he says that he thinks this is mutter, and I was fascinated by his reasoning. He says that the only time you violate Liftei Iver, when you facilitate someone's avera, is when that person is not really a lahachisnik. In other words, they don't really want to violate the Torah. They're not what you'd call mazid, but you made it so tempting that they violated the Torah. And he says that the nurses that are receiving this food clearly know that the sauce is not a kosher sauce. If they decide that they want to eat it anyway, that's called mason. It has nothing to do with, you know, you're tempting them. And he quotes a Dougal Mirvava of the Noda Yehuda in Yoredeya in Sima Kuf Nun Aleph to prove this point. And I was very fascinated by this because I thought this was a big chiddush to say that the only Iser of Liftei Iver is when a person is not really interested, the receiving end, in violating the Torah, but you made it a little bit tempting for that person. But if that person is really out there, irrelevant to the Torah, you know, they're mezidim, and they want to eat this non-kosher food, then you don't violate Liftei Iver. I found that a big chiddush, and he quotes the Noda Bihud. He goes a step further in this question, and apparently somebody asked Rabbi Willig about a situation where the police department, the local policemen, were very helpful to the Orthodox synagogue, and during the Pesach period especially, they took special care to protect the synagogue, and now the shul wants to express their gratitude by sending catered food to the police department. And as it turns out, it seems that the police asked that the food come from a local non-kosher restaurant. I mean, here in this case, I don't know the metzius, but it's hard for me to believe that too many of the members of the local police department anywhere in the world, except for here in Israel, are mostly Jewish. He writes that the issue might be another issue. This I found fascinating, and that's called Hanah from Basar B'Cholov. That's a real chap. That if the food that's coming from the non-kosher restaurant is cheeseburgers, you know, this is the whole issue about owning shares of McDonald's. You know, McDonald's is in most cases, is serving Basar B'Cholov, and you get a certain percentage of the dividends, the profits. So they work out a shtar where you don't get from that part of the trade for SO, you get from the parva stuff at McDonald's. It's a very the Hasidim, especially in America, you know, they took this under advisement and they worked out a special nusach hashtar. But here's a case where there's no nusach hashtar. You know, you're just simply ordering Basar B'Cholov from a non-kosher restaurant in order to satisfy the desire of the police, you know, to be mechabi the police. So Rav Willig says that this is a real problem. He thinks it's machlokas aposkim as to whether or not there's Basar B'Cholov in Basar Nevela. That's a very famous question, because it could be Basar B'Cholov is Gedi, and Gedi has to be from a kosher animal. And that's a gigantic machlokas tanoim and amoroim and poskim. And if he wants to avoid this problem, he says that you have to instruct the caterers that they should not send any food that has meat and milk together. I personally thought that this might not be a problem at all, because you're getting what's called indirect hanah. Hanah from Basar B'Cholov means if I sell Basar B'Cholov on the market, even to a guy, or if I have an animal that I have to feed, and I feed him Basar B'Cholov, I'm being nene from that. But, you know, to say that this is an Iser Hanah, in the sense that, well, the policemen are going to be thrilled with getting Basar B'Cholov because I ordered it from a non-kosher restaurant. I don't know that that's really Hanah from Basar B'Cholov. Hanah from Basar B'Cholov has to be some sort of direct Hanah, not, you know, some sort of gilgul. But in any event, Rav Willig insists that he notify the restaurant or the catering that they should send only foods without any milk content in it. I don't know how feasible that is, by the way. Okay. Now he has an interesting question about the bracha of Baruch Sheftarani. You know, there are people who are making bar mitzvahs and they don't have a minyan. And we know that, for example, Birchas HaGomel requires a minyan. And there's a whole issue about reciting Birchas HaGomel over Zoom. And the questioner who raised this issue, he's Rabbi Aaron Feigenbaum. I don't know if he has relatives in Toronto, but anyway, Rabbi Feigenbaum, he writes that he thinks that if we're going to be Mekil with HaGomel with the Zoom, then we should allow the father of the bar mitzvah boy to recite Birchas Sheftarani Mi'onshe Shel Zeh over the Zoom. Now, I don't understand what the big deal is here, because we don't recite Birchas Sheftarani Mi'onshe Shel Zeh with Shemu Malchus. You know, the only nafkamina would be, let's say, after this whole situation changes and we're back to davening b'tzibur, should we ask the father to recite Baruch Sheftarani Mi'onshe Shel Zeh a second time? I don't know, I wouldn't make a big deal about it. But the nice thing about this is that Rav Willig takes this seriously. And he quotes a tshuva from the Tzitz Eliezer, Rav Waldenberg, who died not long ago, maybe about 10 years ago, 20 years ago, I don't remember. And the Tzitz Eliezer is not talking about Birchas HaGomel, but he's talking about the brach of Sheftarani Meoncho Shalzeh, and the Tzitz Eliezer wants to know if you need a minyan to recite that bracha. There are very few birchas shevach v'odoya that require a minyan. One of them actually is birchas hagomel. Now it seems to me that, and we're going to talk about this later, that a minyan over Zoom is not necessarily a minyan. I mean, there are all sorts of other issues that we'll get to with outdoor minyanim, you know, two sides of the street, and who can see the shots, and can they see each other. But as far as a minyan over Zoom is concerned, I don't know. I mean, it's a nice zechel adomer, but I wouldn't call that a minyan. And therefore, I'm not sure why you could recite Birchas HaGomel over Zoom. And he wants to assume that if we make an equation, that was the question of Rabbi Feigenbaum, his logic was if we could equate Baruch Sheftarani Meoncho Shelzeh with the Brach of HaGomel, we should be able to recite Baruch Sheftarani over Zoom. Again, he's making a whole bunch of assumptions. Assumption number one is that you can recite HaGomel over Zoom. Assumption number two is that we should compare Baruch Sheftarani to Birchas HaGomel, and we should assume you need a minyan. Rav Willig actually quotes the Tzitz Eliezer, that maybe you do need a minyan for Baruch Sheftarani, although I have no clue why. And if we could be making it with HaGomel over Zoom, then likewise we could be making it with Baruch Sheftarani over Zoom. Yeah, I'm not sure, A, if Baruch Sheftarani is a... We haven't really accepted it as a full-fledged brach with Shem U'mal. Secondly, I don't know, and I have no clue, why Baruch Sheftarani requires a minyan. But what fascinates me about Rabbi Willig's answer... Again, you know, Rabbi Willig writes very short and terse, to the point. And he says the following. He says that this opinion that Baruch Sheftarani requires a minyan is a requirement that we fulfill during Kriyas HaTorah. In other words, those who require a minyan for Baruch Sheftarani, their minig is to recite it at Kriyas HaTorah. So Rav Willig asks the following question. If for some reason or another Baruch Sheftarani requires a minyan, according to that opinion, then I don't know why it has to do with Kriyas HaTorah. Meaning in the case of Birchas HaGomel, we don't need Kriyas HaTorah for Birchas HaGomel. You need a minyan. And he quotes a Medrash in Parshas Toldos, and I was absolutely fascinated by this Medrash. To me, it's brand new. Maybe you've heard of it. He says the following. Why Baruch Sheftarani during Kriyas HaTorah? He says, and I quote, because the boy reads the Torah. Again, I'm not sure that everybody has that. But the boy should be reading the Torah. And that demonstrates that he, meaning the child, who's now bar mitzvah, is the master of Torah Shebichsav. Because Kriyas HaTorah is an experience of Torah Shebichsav. Again, we're not saying why you need a minyan. You need a minyan for Kriyas HaTorah, it's a Dovah Shebichdush. I don't know why you need a minyan for Baruch Sheftarani. But he explains that if we can understand why Baruch Sheftarani is connected to the Kriyas HaTorah, then we can justify that meaning that you require a minyan for Baruch Sheftarani. So what's the connection to Kriyas HaTorah? And he says that when the boy reads the Torah, he's demonstrating that he is, quote-unquote, the master of Torah Shebichsav. Which, by the way, you know, I was always opposed to this whole pressure that the Bar Mitzvah has to read the Torah. Okay, but on Mondays and Thursdays, Nishkefel, three Aliyahs, you know, we'll get by. I'm not so sure I'm excited about, you know, the Bar Mitzvah reading the entire parish on Shabbos. I have various reservations about that meeting, but I'm not going to fight City Hall. So he says that why is it so critical that the father recite this bracha of Bar Shef Tarani, and what's the meaning of this bracha, at Kriyas HaTorah when his son becomes Bar Mitzvah and reads the Torah? He says because this marks the completion of his father's obligation to teach his son Torah. That's what Baruch Shef Tarani is about. This is very new to me. I always thought Baruch Shef Tarani means now he's got Tariq Mitzvahs, the boy is on his own. I'm no longer responsible. Don't hold me guilty, the father declares. No. What the father is declaring is Baruch Shef Tarani, I no longer have an obligation to Talmud Torah. And this is based on a Rambam, which I taught in Canada way back when. The Rambam Hilchos Talmud Torah says that the father's chiyuv is to teach Torah Shebichsav to his child. For Torah Shebal Peh, he can give the child over to a Rebbe and let the Rebbe teach him. So this again, I got very excited here and I wanted to share this with you. I begin to appreciate, you know, this whole concept of the bracha and the meaning of the bracha of Baruch Shef Tarani, and why this minig is dafka to attach it not only to a minyan, but not really to a minyan per se. I need the minyan for Kriyas HaTorah. We're really just attaching it to Kriyas HaTorah. And add to boot that it's because the boy himself is reading the Torah, demonstrating publicly that he is the master of Torah Shebichsav. And the father says, now I fulfilled my obligation. I can rest assured of teaching Torah Shebichsav to my son, and that is the primary obligation incumbent on the father. There's one last comment I want to make on this very short piece. Everything we discussed in the last 10 minutes is in about 5 lines here. But that is that if you're doing Hagomel on Zoom, and the questioner here wanted to equate Baruch Shef Tarani with Hagomel, and basically Rav Willick saying that if you're requiring a minion for Baruch Shef Tarani, then I don't know if that Zoom is going to help you because you need a Kriyas HaTorah. But I wanted to say something else, that according to the questioner, let's go back to Birchas HaGomel, and he wants to say that you can fulfill Birchas HaGomel on Zoom during this period of Corona, of Tfilas Yachid, of everybody davening B'Yachidus. What's the HaGomel on Zoom? And again, this is a bracha b'shem u'malchus, so I want to be careful about this. So I once researched this. I wrote an article in Tchumin about the requirement of a minyan for HaGomel. Yesh lachkor, what is it? Is it Davar Shebikedusha, meaning when I publicly declare the nest, the miracle of the four categories, that itself makes it into Davar Shebikedusha, v'nikdashti b'toch b'nei Yisrael, any publicity, any public declaration of a miracle that any Jew experienced is itself Kiddush Hashem, so it's a Davar Shebikedusha, or no? It's what I call a chovas pirsum. Pirsum means that you have to publicize it. If you experience the miracle, your obligation is to publicize it. It's a chovas pirsum. And this touches on a basic issue about Megillas Esther. Megillas Esther l'chatchila requires a minyan, but not necessarily because of Davar Shebikedusha. I don't know that Kriyas HaMegillah is a Davar Shebikedusha. Maybe it is. It might be requiring asar for parhesia, because the mitzvah is pirsum anes. And pirsum anes is inherent in the very essence of Chanukah and Purim on a national level, on a communal level, but in the case of Arba Tzrichim Lahodos, his pirsum is on an individual level. He has to go out and publicize his miracle. In fact, in the Tziv Mivalojin, in his commentary on the Torah, in Parshas Korban Todah, says that the reason why there are so many lachamim in Todah, 40 breads, is because he has to go out there and publicize his miracle. And he's going to divvy up these breads with all his friends. So that's a personal chovas pirsum. And if that be the case, then I could begin to understand how Gomel over Zoom, because I was a little bit put aback here. The questioner assumes that HaGomel can recite it over Zoom, and Rabbi Willig doesn't question that. Who says that Zoom is meaningful for Agomel? I need a tzibur. The answer is, it could be that I don't need a tzibur. And here I'm going to say something, and I know I'm going to get it over the head for saying this, but it could be that if you're going to permit Hagomel over Zoom, I don't know that you need 10 men. It could be that women could be on the Zoom. I know I'm going to get over the head for this. You know, they're going to... You know what? I think women are even greater at person than men are. Men are. Tisha Kabin Yardel Ola. There were ten kabin of sicha that came down for Shemayim. The women took 9. And my Rebbe, Rabbi Alpert Olashon, used to always say with a smile on his face, it doesn't say that the men took the last kav. That too was split between the men and the women. That's what he used to say. Okay. Now he wants to know about holding a koshel bracha. This is very interesting.
So, I'm sorry, Rav.
Yes.
So what did you come out with? What was your decision on this?
No, I'm just saying that in my humble opinion, I would leave out Hagomel on Zoom. I would require Hagomel in a tzibur, because I think it might be a dovrish of a tzibur. It's a tremendous kiddush Hashem when you publicize a miracle in front of Asar Yisrael. In fact, it's machlokas haposkim whether a person could recite Hagomel if he has only 9 other men. Because if it's Pirsum, then he needs 10 other men. But if it's a Dovrish of a Tzibur, then he's part of the minion. And I think we paskel halacha that he only has to get 9 other men, which means that it's a Dovrish of a Kedusha, Dovrish of a Tzibur. And that's why I would think that Zoom is not going to cut the mustard here. I'm a big fan of Zoom, but I don't think it's going to help you here. But I'm just pointing out that if you want to say that Agoma works over Zoom, then I understand Rabbi Feigenbaum's question. He thinks that therefore Baruch Shef Tarani should be like Hagomel. You know, it's like a Birchas Hashemach Vodoya that God, you know, brought me to this day that I've seen that my son has reached mitzvahs, and just like Zoom works in Hagomel, Zoom should work in Baruch Shef Tarani. That was his question. And Rav Willig, I think, is mentioning a little bit of a, what we call in Hebrew, a histaigut, meaning he's a little bit afraid here. He's a little bit inhibited to allow Baruch Shef Tarani, or sanction Baruch Shef Tarani, which I don't understand the Shaila in general, but to sanction it over Zoom, because he wants Kriyas HaTorah, which is a whole new dimension, which I'm very excited about. This I would really... You know, next time I see Rabbi Willig, I want to give him a yashikach for this, because it's a whole new insight into Birchas Baruch Shef Tarani based on a Medrash Chazal, which I was totally unaware of. And it connects it to Kriyas HaTorah, again, with the proviso that the child is reading the Torah. And the father is saying that I'm potter from the mitzvah Talmud Torah. That was my main chiyuv as a father, and I fulfill this chiyuv. Haraya, my son, is a master of Torah Shebichtav. Now, Halacha L'maisa, again, if it is a shaila at all, whether you could recite Baruch Shef Tarani over Zoom because you require a Zoom, which I don't think so, but according to that one minig that requires a minion, then, you know, I would be in doubt. Now, if Baruch Shef Tarani is a kind of a pirsum, I don't know how you would have, maybe, I don't know, maybe if the son would somehow, over Zoom, he would publicly demonstrate his mastery over Torah Shebichtav. You know, he wins the Chidon HaTanach on Yom HaTzmaut. So maybe in that case, the father could recite Baruch Shef Tarani over Zoom. He's just publicly declaring, and it's a Pirsum Halach, it's not a Dovrish HaKedusha, that he's potter from the mitzvah. But I think the way that this bracha was established, it's got to be Kriyas HaTorah. It's not winning the Chidon HaTanach.
But it should also be a riot that you should
So they're going with a different mahalach. Then I would say, according to that minug, Baruch Shef Tarani, the way I always understood it, is a general thanks to Hashem that I'm no longer responsible for my son's averus.
Right.
has nothing to do with Talmud Torah and Kriyas HaTorah.
Rav, there's no connection. You would say there's no connection between Birchas HaGomel and the Bracha of Bikurim.
Bikurim, you said?
Yeah, when he makes his pronouncement of Bikurim by the Beis HaMikdash.
Ah.
Would you not? There's no connection between those two, so therefore, that you could, you know, there's not an inyan of minyan there. There's a minyan of Bitsibur, you know.
Well, I don't know that there's any tzibur in Mikra Bikurim. I never heard of such a thing. Maybe you know something that I don't know.
Yeah, that's what you're saying. It doesn't talk about Bikurim.
Right. No, I think Bikurim is a Chovas Karka. You know, I'm not sure about that. Anyway, that's complicated. But Bikurim has to do with Havas Bikurim. And every single Jew, when he brings his Bikurim, is Chayav and Mikra Bikurim. Here we're talking about one of the four categories of someone who experienced a Yeshua from Hashem. His life was in danger, and now he's publicly announcing God's great salvation. I wouldn't compare that to Birchas, to Mikra Bikurim, offhand. I just want to point out he has another Shiloh, and here Rabbi Willig is way too terse for me, because I don't know how he knows this. Let me ask you, just as a quiz question, just to see if I can evoke the same intuitive response that I had. We have a halacha called the Koshel Bracha. Now, is it enough that I recite a bracha and the kos is somewhere, I don't know where it is, but it's there, or do I have to pick up the kos? What would you say? I mean, just intuitively, like a kind of a knee-jerk response. Anybody? Yeah, I would think that the Mevarech should be picking up the kos in order to create what I call a tziruf between the bracha and the kos. Well, the questioner, no, anonymous, asks about what he calls a minimus wedding. So there are only 10 men at the wedding, or whatever number you're allowed. I mean, here in Israel, you know, it was originally 50, they lowered it to 10, now they jacked it up to 100. I don't know, every minute it changes like a ticker tape. And in order to give out kibudim, because it's such a small group, he wants to like give everyone a shot at it. So he wants to know, the questioner, if you could give out the brachos at this wedding, very small turnout for this wedding, but allow other people to come up and hold the kos. Now, I understand that there's a certain kind of intuitive psychological logic over here. You know, very often when I'm a Sada Kiddushin, I say, well, you know, have a child bring up the ring, you know, all this kind of shtuyot, pardon the expression, but, you know, to get everyone involved, you know. So he wants to get everyone involved, and he wants to know, can one person hold the kos? You know, they call him up for achizas hakos, and the other person make the bracha. So Rav Willig gives a one-word answer. He says, yes. Now, I don't know exactly why. Maybe he means because of Corona. It's a very extreme situation, so we want to get everyone involved. I would have said that the Mavarek should hold the cuts.
It's not clear from the Shiloh, but if that Mavarek, the guy who's holding the cup first, if he made the Bar Priya Gofen, and then the other ones made the Shevar Baruchas on that, and maybe that would be a little different. Because if I'm the one that, like, so if you want to give out the Shevar Brachos to other people, but there's one, the guy who's holding the kais made the kais, the Birchas Hananim.
Right, right. But I have a feeling that he's talking about the Shevar Brachos at the end of the Chasana.
You still make a brach.
You know, but then the Bar Priya Gofen is all the way at the end, so I don't know if you could be Mitzarev, you know, all the brachos. I know that every wedding that I went to, they were very makpid. Again, unless you're talking about an older gentleman or someone, I remember the case, you know, Reb Nosson Tzvi was Masada Kedusha for my son Menachem. He could not hold the kos. So we had someone else hold the kos. But again, that's not just to get someone else involved in the kibud. Here he just wants to broaden the number of kibudim. So I don't know why Rav Willig, without blinking, says that's okay. I'm not sure. I'm going to quote another answer answer of Rav Willig in a minute, which also I'm not sure why he says this. You know, again, he's very short-winded. Fine. Now, he has a shaila here, which I don't understand. He writes, can a get be written during Corona? And Rav Willig writes, with social distancing. I'm not exactly sure what the issue here is. Very unclear to me. You're talking about writing a get. I mean, a get is written by a sofer, and the Edim will instruct the sofer to write the get lishma for the sake of this husband and for the sake of this wife. So I'm not sure what he means by a get being written during Corona. Maybe he's talking about the Kabbalah Saget, and because of Kohanim, we want to make sure that there's a pirsum, that there's a public statement that this woman is no longer permitted to a Kohen, so we get together, you know, X number of people for the get. Let's say 10 people for the get. I'm not sure that you need 10, but it's not a Dovership of Kedusha or anything like that. I mean, if you'd ask me, I would say a get could be given in front of two witnesses over Zoom. When I say over Zoom, I mean the two witnesses are there to see the husband give the get to his wife. But I don't know if the other 8 people, you know, have to be there. I think Zoom would be okay for that. I don't know. But anyway, it's just a one-line answer. Now, I want to talk to you a little bit about Sfira. And you may have seen on the YU Torah site a tshuva from Rav Schechter about Avelus during Sfira. And honestly, I think it's kedai to learn this tshuva simply to get a perspective halachically on what Avelus is during Sfira. And he says the following, that in Avelus Chadasha, like my wife just experienced for the last week, there's Shiva, and then it goes on to Shloshim, and then to Yud Beis Chodesh for father and mother. He says that there are 3 different categories. So I'm going to say it over in my language. He writes, Shiva is called, he says, Nivul. And then he divides Nivul into 2 categories. There's Nivul Meruba and Nivul B'miktas. It's very difficult to translate the word Nivul into English. I think the best example I could give you is what we call, and I don't mean this to be pejorative, but a homeless hobo on the street, you know, who doesn't take care of himself, he doesn't shower, he doesn't shave his beard, he doesn't cut his hair. That's called Nivul. And the Ramban, who has written extensively about Avelus in what's called, Rabbi Chevelle put it together under Kisvei Ramban from Moser Rav Kook, he speaks at great length about this concept of Nivul. And he explains why an Avel has to be in a state of Nivul. But I'm not sure that the Ramban, from what I remember, distinguishes between Nivul b'meruba and Nivul b'miktas. And Rav Schechter is assuming that somehow, even during Shloshim, there's a concept of Nivul. Okay, fine. Maybe he means because there's an Isur of Giluach and Tisporis for Shloshim. So that's another form of Nivul. There's no Isur Achitza, so the most extreme Nivul, full-fledged Nivul, is during Shiva, because you're not allowed to even take a bath or a shower. And you don't even change your clothes. You know, you basically wear the Kriya for the entire Shiva. And what's left into Shloshim from that original intense Nivul is Miktas Nivul, which is an Isur of Tispores and Giluach, without any other additional Isurim like Rechitza. So for example, a woman who finishes Shiva and goes into Shloshim, she's allowed to use cosmetics and so forth and so on. So that's a lightening of Nivul. I think it says that a woman is allowed to take a haircut, if I'm not mistaken. You check me out on that. Which means that there's no Nivul during Shloshim for a woman. So this whole concept of Nivul is only for men. That's a little bit odd to me. I would have said a little bit different. I would have said that Shloshim is a very intense Isur of Maisa Simcha, or Maisa Reus, that any sort of social gathering and weddings and so forth, those kind of banquets, that's prohibited. But the only question on my shot is that what's the difference now between Shloshim and Yud Beis Chodesh? Now Rav Shechter writes that Yud Beis Chodesh is called Miut Ta'anugim. Miut Ta'anugim. I'm not sure what that means. Miut Ta'anugim, what does that mean? You can't take a hot bath, or you can't lie in the sun if that's what you enjoy. For 12 months, let's say, on the loss of a parent, you don't go into a Beis HaMishteh, and you don't participate in a wedding or any sort of public celebration. I'm not sure if that's what he means by Miut Ta'anugim. But what's important is the next paragraph. And he says, what is Avelus of Sfira? He says that Avelus of Sfira has the same identical status as Yud Beis Chodesh for Ovi V'Imo. Have you ever heard this? And he therefore says that what Avelus de Sfira is all about is Miut Ta'anugim, based on his definition of Yud Beis Chodesh. So he wants to know if during Corona you can have leniencies in Avelus of Sfira, because he writes, and I'm quoting him, Kol Ha'olam Shori B'Tzar. He says that the whole world is in a state of anguish. It's like, if I can quote the Pasuk, Ein Bayis Asher Ein Sham Mes, everybody in some way is touched by Corona. I mean, before my father-in-law died from Corona, one of my friends here in Yerushalayim died from Corona. And now I find out that my oldest friend from childhood survived a life-threatening Corona. It's unreal. He still needs tons of recovery, and I didn't even know about it. So he says, if the world is in tsar, then we have to get out of the state of tsar. Because tsar he calls dikaon, or atzvut. That's not what Yud Beis Chodesh is about. Yud Beis Chodesh doesn't mean that you have to be depressed for a year, or you have to be sad for a year. Yud Beis Chodesh means you have to avoid ta'anugim. And he claims that in this situation where a person is in tsar and he needs to hear music, then he'd be allowed to hear music if need be, again, if his psychological state requires it, during this period of time when everyone is in tsar. So his music is not for the sake of hoopla, not for the sake of tainug, but rather to get out of the state of tsar. Fascinating insight. And I just want to make two more points, and then I'll throw this out to the Olam here. He writes that the original minhag of Avelus during Sfira was only as far as musikai writes, Bederech Rikudin. In other words, in the old days, music meant that you went out and you danced. We can think of all sorts of scenes in our mind of public dancing, amongst the goyim, and that was what music was for. He says, over the course of time, the minhag expanded to include all sorts of music, not only music that brings you to singing. He says that one of the students that he knows of Rav Soloveitchik before his time, and he studied halacha with Rav Soloveitchik. Rav Soloveitchik allowed listening to classical music during Sfira. Has nothing to do with Corona. Has nothing to do with depression or getting out of depression. Because the Rav Soloveitchik considered classical music as something that's not meant for, hoopla and dancing, but it's art. Some sort of art form. But be that as it may, he concludes here that in Margish Shemuchach Lahakshiv Lemuzika Kide Lotzeis Midikon HaNefesh, he says, then he says that in our situation, the minhag of music during Sfira goes back to the original minhag, which excludes those kinds of very, very exciting musical experiences which would lead you to singing. And we're going to go back to the original minhag. Again, I embellished this in my own language. I'm not sure if I did justice, but that's how I understand the tshuva of Rav Shechta. He goes on to say that there was a minhag back in the day that on Erev Shabbos, Somach LeKabbalas HaShabbos, they used to play music. Klishir v'zemer nigunim l'kvod HaShabbos. This is before Shabbos. Why? Because that's the mitzvah of Kvod Shabbos. And it's based on, he says, the Gemara in Erevin, on Daf Mem Amid Beis. So I'd have to see the Gemara, but he says that he might even allow music, benegina, on Erev Shabbos, during Sfira. He doesn't come to any conclusive definition at the end. So this is quite fascinating to me. I just want to mention, somebody sent me, and I wish I could forward it to you, a tshuva about Corona from Rav Usher Zelig Weiss. And Rav Weiss doesn't mention this writing of Rav Shechta, but I have a feeling he knows about it, because again, it's publicly accessible. And he writes that there are those who are being makil during the coronavirus to allow, you know, for a state of normalcy and try to get us back on the track of normalcy. And he writes, Adarabba, that during Corona, we should be more machmir. Why? Because we want to show HaKadosh Baruch Hu how much we love His Torah. And that's going to spare us from this magefa. Very interesting. You know, Rav Shechta is looking at it from, you know, the perspective of a pikuach nefesh kind of halacha, and dikaon and atzvus is something that we have to avoid, this psychological depression, chas v'shalom. And during Sfira, even though we have an avelus of Yud Beis Chodesh, he says that's only to be mamait b'tainug, and that kind of music which would bring you to a state of tainug and such that you want to jump up and start dancing, that should be avoided. But some kind of a music which would I was wondering today, I don't know if you saw it, there's a beautiful, beautiful video of Tzur Yisrael Begoalo. Have you seen it? If you haven't seen it, I think you should see it, even though it's Sfira, and I don't know your Hashkafa and Yom Ha'atzmaut, but in this case, it's Chazonim from all over the world that are singing Medinat Yisrael, Reishit Tzmichat Gulateinu, Atzur Yisrael V'Golo. It's absolutely magnificent. You have to see it. If anybody wants, just send me a little note in the email, and or if you have WhatsApp, and I'll forward it to you. Ma'od Kedai, I got very emotional. I'm not even sure if all those Chazonim are such frumach. Most of them are quite frum. But it's from all over the world. And they have how they worked it together. And you see, and each Chazon sings another little piece. It's fascinating. So I would say that that's okay during Sfira. I was thinking of sending it to my wife, but then I decided that my wife is in Shloshim. And Shloshim is more Chomer than Sfira. And there's musical background to this, so I don't know. You know that I didn't want to get into it, so I just decided not to send it to her.
Where's that?
Yes.
Joe, go first.
Okay. I just wanted to ask if when you're saying this, why do you have to say that they're arguing? Why can't you say that Rabbi Shachter is talking about a situation in which the person can't be mesameach the Torah or can't get out of his depression? So therefore, for him, it's the music.
I'll tell you, Joe, maybe we'll get a chance to go through this. Rav Shechta, as I apologized to you last week, Rav Shechta has about 31 tshuvas here. I don't know if I'll get through two or three. But there's a consistency here in Rav Shechta. I just mentioned one of them about music during Sfira. I'm going to give you another one. You know, again, this might not be relevant in Toronto. You'll tell me, I'm not sure what's going on here, but here in Yerushalayim, the mikvahs for Kalim are closed. I heard of one mikvah that opened already, because again, we're going through they're lightening some of the restrictions. But let's say during Corona, you can't get to a mikvah to be tovel a new keli, and your wife says, I need this badly, and it was manufactured by a guy. And Rav Shecht, again, during Corona, he has a kula. I hope we'll get to it. I mean, again, I'm a little bit nervous about the timing, but because I want to talk to you a little bit about Aninus and Avelus, and then if we have time, about Tefilas Kalim. He came up with a kula that's unbelievable. He has another shaila about kidneys with regard to people who need to strengthen their immunity system during the coronavirus, and he says, let him take the kidneys. By the way, I don't know if I told you this, they brought me, before Pesach, did I tell you this? A whole box of food? Yes or no? Just shake your head, I can see you. I didn't tell you this. They brought me a whole box of food. I felt like I was on the receiving end of Yad Eliezer. You know, my wife and I are very active in Yad Eliezer. I never realized how fundamentally different Pesach is between the Sfaradim and the Ashkenazim. 90% of this gigantic box of food were kidneys, which Rav Yosef said. So thank God I have some Sephardic neighbors here, so I was able to share them. But unbelievable, they sent me beans and peas and corn, and then they sent me sardines. Even the sardines were kidneys. Not that I eat sardines, but... So anyway, Rav Shecht is making with sardines. I can show you over and over again. I'm gonna prove to you now in this tshuva about Avelus, if we get a chance, how much Rav Shecht is looking for kulis in Corona period. So Joe, you may have caught me on one particular point. You know, yeah, you're right. He's trying to avoid depression. I understand, Joe, but I have no doubt that the entire approach here between Rav Weiss Shlita and Rav Shechta Shlita are two different worlds. Rav Weiss is pushing for chumras. He says there's no better time than during Corona to be machmir. And Rav Shechta is looking at it from a whole different perspective. That's all I can say. And if you give me 5 minutes, I just want to share with you Avelus, because if we don't get through Avelus here, I'm going to be upset. So I know, Bobby, you have a question. I don't know how rushed you are. I don't know what goes on in your work. I don't know during this period of time. I have no clue what's happening in Toronto. In any event, Rav Shecht has a tshuva here called Bedin Aninus V'Avelus. I would need at least an hour to present this to you, but I want to give you at least the tip of the iceberg. He's talking about the following scenarios, and we're seeing it in New York, Geferlich, terrible. And I think I may have mentioned last week a testimony of a nurse in Maimonides Hospital. I mean, Maimonides Hospital is a good place to go if you just want to die, and die in the halls. Terrible. So he wants to know about the following. When does Aninus begin? When does it end? When does Avelus begin? In the case where the body is not available, it may take days until the body comes to burial. It may take weeks. That's how bad the situation has become. Hopefully it's getting better. You know, the President of the United States says we're almost ready to turn the corner, but I don't have to tell you the numbers of people that have perished in the United States from this disease. In any event, he says the following, that the Krovim, at this point, have nothing to do. They have no control over the Kvura. The best they can do is organize the Chevra Kadisha and take care of all the arrangements so that when the body is given over, the Chevra Kadisha will bury the dead. He says that there's a whole sugya which is codified in Yerideya Simon Shin Mem Alf called Misha Meis B'Tfisa. Somebody died in jail, and the goyim are not giving up his body for burial. And the psak of the Shulchan Aruch is, in such a case, there's no aninus, because aninus is a preparation for burial. You can't prepare for burial in this case of tefisa. And there's no avelus, because it's before the kvura. So you're in this limbo state. you're basically allowed to drink wine and eat meat and say all the brachas and so forth. You're not an onen. But Avelus hasn't kicked off. But he says there's another siman in Shulchan Aruch, and that's siman Shin Ayin Hey, and that's a case which he thinks is much more relevant and analogous. Nasnuas Hameis Bi Aron. In a case of Haisa Ha'ir B'matzar, so the city is sieged, is in a state of siege, there's a war going on, and the dead body has been placed into a coffin, and Halacha is Monim Lo Miyad Shiva. In this case, there is no Aninus whatsoever, you just go straight into Shiva, straight into Shloshim. They expect to get the body back after the siege is lifted, Emir Hashem, and they'll bury it. And he says it comes out very, very, very paradoxical. He says it's very possible that the Avelus will be finished before the Gvura. And that's what the Halacha is. He says that now that we have a Magefa, we know that somewhere down the line there's going to be Kfura, but we have no idea when it's going to happen. He says he wants to suggest that maybe it fits into one of these two cases, either Meis B'Tfisa or Haisa Ha'ir B'Matzar. And again, this is a long tshuva which I'm not going to go into, but he comes to the conclusion that he thinks that this is like a case of Tfisa, where you know the hospital, so to speak, or the morgue, I don't know what you want to call it, is capturing and holding the dead body, almost like tefisa, and you don't know when this tefisa is going to end, but you expect any day, you know, to get the body and bury it. And he says, when does Aninus, you know, begin and when does it end in this whole business? He has the following scenarios. He has three scenarios here. He says, Ha'av niftar machmas ha-magefa. The father died. He has a scenario here where the mother is ill, not with necessarily the virus, but she's at home, and the son wants to go to the kfura in this case. And she says, I need you home. I can't let you go to the funeral. And Rav Shechta Paskins, in this case, even before the funeral, he starts his Avelus. He goes right into Avelus. He has another case of a son of a woman who died. He lost his mother. The son himself is advanced in years. And he lives in Philadelphia. The kfura is going to take place in New York. And he doesn't have, during the magefa of coronavirus, the ability to get to New York in order to be at the kfura. He gives another number of other cases. We don't have time for that. But the bottom line is, he comes to the conclusion, in such a case, in all the cases that we discuss, you begin Avelus of Shiva even before the kfura. And he says that afilu im hashiva shalo tia nishlemes kodem akvura. It's very possible that he will finish and complete his shiva before kvura. V'yem b'zebaya. He says there's no problem. And he tells us that in the old days when they sent bodies for burial to Eretz Yisrael, sometimes it would take weeks until the body actually got to Eretz Yisrael and they buried the body. And yet they would start avelus as soon as the body was on its way to the airport or to the ship, wherever it was. He says, "B'emtza magefa hodiu le'isha hagara be'eretz Yisrael al p'tiras achia b'New York." So she's here in Israel. Her brother died in New York. I know of someone here in our community whose brother died in California. V'lo shayach she'tasok b'tipul akvura. In other words, the kfura is going on in America at some point. She's in Eretz Yisrael. And he quotes two different opinions about this. According to one opinion, she starts Shiva immediately. So again, there's such a large number of funerals because of coronavirus, there's a backup. in terms of burial. And if the burial can't be performed, then he says Shiva should begin. And he says the state of Anidus ends because whatever preparations you could have possibly done, you've already done. So you've done the best.